Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. Along with me, as always, is Allison Hartley. How are you doing this time around, Allison?
I am doing very well on this rather chilly and brisk morning in Northern California. Very, very un-California weather we're having today.
Are you all having rain?
There has been some rain, thank goodness, because we do certainly need it.
Yeah, I've been hearing about rain in California and good news and bad news with mudslides and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so it's a mixed blessing.
We have hard rain here right now in Texas, and it's supposed to get cold again tonight, so we're all playing with the weather. But we're going to talk about something a whole lot more fun, a lot more soothing, a lot more interesting than the weather today. We're going to talk about music and how to make music and learn to make music. And both you and I are musicians, so obviously it's a topic that's near and dear to us. But
yes,
we have a man on the podcast who has a real expertise at teaching people to play music by ear. And we're going to find out all about that by starting out with welcoming Bill Brown to the podcast. Bill, thank you so much for being here with us today. And please, if you will, take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, I'm the creator of Guitar by Ear, Piano by Ear, and Music for the Blind. But before we go any further, I just picked an azalea off of my bush out here. I live in Georgia. And just hearing you guys talking about rain and cold, I just thought I would just kind of rub that in. We get about 15 springs a year here, most of which occur during the winter. And so my bluebirds are checking out their house again to see if they might want to start another nest. And like I said, my azaleas are blooming, so sorry to hear about your weather.
Yes, well, thank you, Bill.
Well, we're happy for you.
We are. We can take the high road here and just say that we are happy for you.
Okay. Well, you'll get spring eventually, I hope.
Oh, yeah. We have sort of bizarre weather in Texas. We normally don't have much of a winter, although this year it's been crazy with cold weather. But we sort of do a weird thing of going from whatever we call winter more or less into summer. We almost skip spring here. I guess it's spring-like for a couple of days. But once it gets hot, sometime this month, it'll be hot until end of October. So there you go. Anyway, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Well, I started in music when I was about six. My mother is a professional piano teacher, and she just passed away about a year and a half ago. But she, up to within a couple of years, she was still teaching full time. And she's in the Piano Teacher Guild Hall of Fame. And what that means is that she's a classical monster. She went to David Lipscomb College, and even though she wasn't a music major, she was actually a nursing major, she was able to get a piano scholarship just based upon her scales, cadences, and arpeggios. So she was classically trained from the time she was, you know, about six or seven. And so that's kind of who I grew up with. All of that said, when I hit about 10, she bought me a guitar. And that was almost a sacrilege for a classical piano teacher. But what she wanted me to do was to learn country music, because her background, believe it or not, was actually from the hills of Tennessee. And all of her relatives played bluegrass music. So even though she was classically trained, she always had a love for that style of music and popular music. And one of the beauties behind learning the guitar in that time period was, if you were learning anything off of the radio, you were covering everything from folk to rock to hip-hop, what would later become hip-hop, blues, jazz. Just think of groups like Chicago that mixed jazz and funk and rock all together. Then there were groups that were like Creedence Clearwater Revival. You know, was it rock? Was it folk? Was it country? And so I was learning all of this, and what was really cool about that was that you learned about chord progressions, which really is more of a foundation of what's going on in music than just note playing. And because I had that going on in my music education as well as my classical, I had a real understanding of how music was put together, more so than somebody who just did one or the other. And so with that background, when I started teaching, I started incorporating more of the chord progressions. And also with the chord progressions, if you understand chords, it's easier to pick out things by ear. And as I was telling you earlier, before we got on this podcast, I had a guitar teacher that even though he could read music and I could read music, he wouldn't write anything down. I would go in for my lesson. He'd say, okay, we're going to learn a song, you know. I said, cool, you know, where's the music? He said, there's no music. It goes like this. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And so I had to pay attention, you know, to what he was doing. But when I went home, I had to remember what it was I heard and associate that with what I did. And that is the foundation for playing by ear. And as soon as you can get the music and even just looking at somebody else playing out of the equation and just remember what it was you heard and what it was you did, then when you hear it again, you'll know exactly where to go. And so I started teaching all of my students, as you know, as well as reading the music, I started teaching them by ear. And we learned several songs completely by ear. And it's still amazing that when they're playing the song, if they forget a section, I can just hum it badly, and they know exactly where to go. Because all they need is that cue in their head of, here's what it sounds like, here's where it is. And it's the same way you learn to speak, you know, language. It's the same idea. You associate what it is you're thinking about or what it is you're looking at with a word, and that word comes forward. And that's the way I teach, as well as reading music. Nothing wrong with reading music. But then I started recording these lessons because I really didn't want to teach Sweet Home Alabama one more time.
I hear you.
And so I recorded the lessons on tape, and I would make them take the tape home and learn the song by ear and come back, and they could do it. Well, what was interesting is I had a blind student, and he did it better than everybody else. And I thought, you know, this is really the way for somebody to learn if they're visually impaired or blind and can't work with music, or God forbid, Braille music. I had one of my customers send me a piece of music, you know, in Braille music. And he said, just want you to know, here's what you saved me from.
Braille music is cumbersome and complicated.
Well, it is, because you have to use one hand to read it and then another hand to try to figure out what it is you're playing. Whereas if you can keep both hands on the instrument and just do it all by ear, it's quicker, but also more importantly, you're developing your ear so that later on you can pick out other songs by ear. And my wife came in one day and she said, you know, if somebody were blind, you know, this would be the way for them to learn wherever they were, but they would need a beginner course. And so I sent her and the kids away for a day and just sat in my studio and made the beginner course called Intro to the Guitar for the Visually Impaired. And no matter where you are on the planet, if you speak English and can understand Georgian, you can learn the basics of guitar enough that you can tap into these other recorded lessons that I've already made. And that's how the two kind of became wed to each other, because Guitar by Ear was already on the internet being made available to anyone. But once again, if you were visually impaired and you had no basics for the guitar, you really couldn't jump right in there with the Guitar by Ear lesson because you just didn't know the basics of the instrument. And with that intro course, what happened was that now somebody who was blind or visually impaired got brought up to speed enough to where they could tap into that library, which at that time was only about 50 titles, but now the Guitar by Ear library is, you know, about well over 500, and the Piano by Ear, which is the same concept, is about 300 songs. Altogether, there's about 1,100 songs that have been taught completely by ear in an audio format. And then you have those intro courses, which we have the Intro to the Guitar. Now we have Intro to the Piano, Intro to the Bass Guitar, Intro to the Drums, Intro to the Saxophone, Intro to the Ukulele, Intro to the Harmonica. My daughter made the course Intro to the Violin. So there's about 13 instruments that are taught in an intro course. And then once you've completed those courses, there are, you know, several, and if not hundreds, of lessons for piano, guitar, bass, banjo, and flute is another instrument we added. So all of the, and saxophone, all of those have additional lessons beyond the intro course.
So if I'm understanding it, it sounds like you have really a business model where you apparently teach some lessons live. If people want to come to you for lessons, that's one possibility.
Correct.
But if that's not possible, or if someone on the other side of the country wants to learn something, a lot of these lessons are available either, I assume, online or are available that can be ordered from you somehow. How does all that work?
Correct. The website is set up where it takes payments. You can order the lesson on CD or tape or as a downloadable. And we just set up the website to where it's mobile friendly. So when you go to the main store, if you're using a mobile device like we had talked about, Apple is very visually handicap friendly, and I'm sure they have an app for that. And so you can just go to the website, which is musicvi.com. Once you go there, just click on the shopping cart. It'll take you to the shopping cart. And if you're using a mobile app, it's really easy to navigate. All of my blind customers who've gone to it using a mobile app have loved it. So it's really easy to operate. And so you can order the lessons in a downloadable format. It's just basically a zip file. Once you unzip it, it's MP3s, just like if you were to rip a CD. And then you just click and play. But, of course, we still offer tape and CD as well, which would come through the mail and with a shipping charge. And the downloadable versions are cheaper. Like, you can download most of the lessons for $10. The intro courses, which are the equivalent of 4 CDs, they're $35, except for the sax course, which wound up being like 5 or 6 CDs for some reason, just super long. So it's a little bit more. It's like $39. But all the individual song lessons, like let's say if you wanted to learn like that Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the one I played earlier, you can get that for $10. And of course, I'll play through the song for you, and then I will teach it to you just totally by ear, breaking each phrase down. Now, some of the older titles, I might not play through the entire song for you, but something off of the radio, because the assumption is that you have that available. But some of the newer ones, and really everything since the last couple of years, I'll play through the entire arrangement. Mainly because it's easier to do it now than it used to be because of technology. And it's easier for me to get the licenses to do that. Because anytime you're using somebody else's song, you have to get a license. And it's getting a lot easier because of the internet to get licenses. Whereas before, it was pretty arduous.
I've worked through one of your lessons, which is the one of the guitar by ear lessons, which is teaching first position scales. And you teach all of the scales, 2 octaves. And one of the things that you do a really great job of is you actually describe the finger positions for all of the scales. And I'm assuming that you do something similar when you teach the songs.
Yes, absolutely. I assume that there's, well, because I'm doing it all by ear, I assume that you can't see what I'm doing. And that's kind of why I'm doing it. And I would rather talk about scale positions and where your hand is and get you to think that way than like, well, look here and here's what I'm doing. See this, or look at the tab. That really, while tab is, and music reading has allowed music to travel, a long distance, it had to take that form because the teacher could not go those distances. But now because the teacher can, as soon as I can get students using their ears, I really try to do that. And like I said, not just because they're blind, but because I want them to use their ears. And as soon as you can get people doing that, the better. But yes, I do. I describe where I am on the neck, fret numbers, finger numbers, anything unusual. Because sometimes you're going to have an odd technique, like I was just doing this little jazz piece where you use this lick a lot. And I want to describe that in detail. So I'll take my time and break that down and talk a little bit about the theory, what's going on, why it works. And that way, when you run across it again, you'll know what to do. Instead of saying, well, where's the video on that, or where's the tab on that? I want it to be in your head. I want it to be under your hand. I want it to be in your ears. The way I teach, I really want to get them off of the page as soon as possible. But I do want them to be able to read music, because there might be a song you want to learn that you cannot find a recording for. And I have a few of those that I teach my students where you just cannot find the recording, and you need the music. But then you have all of your ear skills in place to know how to interpret that. Once you start playing it, you say, I bet this guy wanted to do this. Even though the music can't convey that. The same way, like when you're learning a language, or if you're to learn a foreign language, you might run across something unusual in the particular city or culture you're in. And while you might not have the book there, if your ear's pretty good, you say, I bet this is what they're talking about, even though you don't necessarily understand exactly what it is they said. And that's where, ear training comes in. But you have to do it, and most people don't want to do it.
Well, you've got a great point about music learning being similar to language learning. And for me, I know, when I was a kid learning to play, I learned the same way you're talking about, listening to songs on the radio, figuring out what what they were doing by listening to them, and pretty quickly got accustomed to understanding what chord changes sound like. And after a little while, you begin to realize you can just listen to a song, or I can, and tell basically where they're going with those chords, what chords they're playing.
Right. And see, because of my mother's classical education, I think she realized that she was limited in that area. You could not play things by ear. I had an older sister who did only the piano, and she can't play anything by ear. But my younger siblings who came after me have a very good ear. But that's mainly because they saw me doing it. And me, I would teach them how to play modern songs, even on the piano, using chord progressions instead of just, the dots on the page.
Right.
And it's a matter of doing it, just like you just figured out things by ear. The more you do it, then you start seeing the pattern. Then you just start knowing the patterns. And if you have that as your structure, and then on top of that, add the music reading, you'll be a much better musician. And it's kind of like technology. They say that most kids are more savvy with technology than adults because adults are afraid to push a button.
Right.
Kids aren't.
No, they're not.
I
think it's fascinating, as a thought experiment, to think about your mom for a minute and what she did. She didn't go about learning music by learning it by ear, but it's just interesting to think about the fact that she didn't automatically develop that. So it does seem like there does have to be some effort put into that particular development of that skill.
Correct. And I think most of it is getting over the fear. Just talking about kids, they're not afraid to push a button. Adults, they've seen too many things go bad, like reformat hard drive.
Yes. Right.
Yes or no? What is the answer to that? And, whereas kids, they'll just click and learn, and they're not really worried about consequences. And really, for most part, technology, nobody's going to die if you hit the wrong button. And with piano and guitar, it's the same way. If you play a bad note, nobody falls over dead. It's just a bad note. And you try a different note. And you say, this is the right note. And so it's getting over that that old school fear of playing a wrong note. And I think with the piano, it was probably more common that, if a kid would go up and just, play a few notes on the piano, the parent would come over there and slam the lid down and say, no.
Right.
That's not a toy, and when you start taking lessons, then we'll learn how to. And so there's a fear there. But with the guitar, it's like, just rednecks and idiots play that, so who cares?
Well,
what happened, was that with the guitar, even though it's a very, very powerful instrument, most of the time it's used just for accompaniment. And you realize there's only about four or five chords that are used in each song.
Right. Well, one question that I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on, Bill, is the question of, as a sighted musician, you have the advantage of being able, and I don't know whether you do it or not, of being able to glance down at the neck of your guitar or the keyboard on the piano and see where you are. And a blind musician doesn't have that advantage. But, it's very important that if you know you need to start a guitar break on C sharp when it's your turn to play the break, it's very important that you are on that note and not on C or D or one or two frets away, because it really bad things happen if you're not at the right place. And I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
Well, what I tell my beginner students who are blind to do is, when we start getting ready to move up the neck, is to get you like a little piece of paper that's adhesive back and just put it on the fifth fret, just on the back where your thumb can feel it when you move. And that will train you to feel where that is. And eventually it will wear off. But your muscle memory will tell you where to go.
Yeah.
At least get you to the fifth fret. But, you can learn it, and every guitar is a little different. Even when I sit down, like right now I've got my Taylor, which has about a 1 3/4 inch nut on it. I have a classical that's like a 2 inch wide nut. Then my electric's a little bit narrower. And when I sit down to play each one, I have to spend a couple of minutes getting used to the way it feels under my hand.
Right.
But then, you adapt to it. It's like just going from, your iPhone to your laptop, to your desktop. The keyboard is different. But once you acclimate to where you are, your hands pretty much know where to go. And so with each instrument, you're going to have to get comfortable with it. On the piano course, I get the students used to feeling the 3 black keys and 2 black keys.
Right.
You can do that just by lightly touching your index finger. You can tell where you are. And once you get the feel for that, then the spacing gets more and more comfortable. And you kind of know where you are, and you'll miss every now and then. And even being sighted, I'll still miss every now and then. But the more you practice with it, the more your hand knows where to go. And it just does. It's just muscle memory.
I think the key word there that you're talking about is lots and lots of practice.
Sure. With anything.
Lots of repetition. I know I just took it on myself to learn to play those scales. And I started maybe last September, last October, something like that. And I've been, since that point, have been very disciplined about it and have done it, have made myself play through all the scales at least twice a day, you know, usually more than once. But just that discipline and that practice of doing that every day has really paid off for me. And so that's something people have to be willing to do is put that time into it.
It is. And as adults, you have to get over the fear of hitting a bad note. That really, I can't emphasize that enough. It's so strange. All my adults that take music from me always feel like they're doing worse than my kids, and yet all the adults always do better than the kids. And I think adults are just more aware of time, and they're more aware of mistakes. But you've got to get over that fear of hitting a bad note. And once you do that, you don't mind taking that risk to get to the note, and you'll usually nail it 90% of the time.
Well,
and
sure.
Even if you don't, it's not because you're not sighted, just because you're a human being. Because I'll miss notes every now and then. And it's just because you're a human being, and your brain doesn't always fire exactly right.
And even when you miss that note, I'm assuming that life still goes on, huh?
It does, and I heard the rule that if you hit a bad note, just go one fret either direction, it will probably sound fine.
Right.
And if there's a part that says, well, you got to be a, well, wait a minute, you're right.
Well, Allison, you've been listening to all this, and you yourself, I know, are a trained musician. What are your thoughts about the things we're talking about here?
Well, I can't wait to pick up the guitar course. I'm a singer, primarily. I have dabbled in instruments here and there, but I actually went to school on a voice scholarship, and I couldn't help but identify a little bit with your mom, Bill, because I was classically trained, but I had the unique experience of being classically trained as a singer and learning entirely by ear. I tried Braille music. I hated it. It was awful. And I found that, you know, learning by ear as I transitioned now into singing more jazz and popular music, that it's really, really helped me.
I agree. Now, what I would recommend for you, you know, as a singer, of course, you know, the guitar course would be great because you can accompany yourself with modern music. But I would also check into the piano a little bit, because the theory, it's laid out more logically on the piano than it is on the guitar. Because the guitar...
Okay.
You're dealing with six different strings.
Yeah.
Go up to about the fourth or fifth fret, depending on which string, and then it's going to go to the next string. Whereas on the piano, middle C is one place on that piano, just like it is on your voice. It's one place on your voice. But I can play middle C about four or five different places on the guitar. So the theory is a little more scattered in your brain as somebody who's coming in as a monophonic instrument, like a vocalist would be. Whereas on the piano, it's a little more, it's just laid out more logically for that. And it might help you to, in your mind's eye, to see better where things are pitch-wise and distance on the piano than it would be on the guitar. But at the same time, I would still seriously consider the guitar just so you can accompany yourself singing. It's a very portable instrument.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
And I'll check out both.
I think you would really benefit from both. Just, you know, as a classically trained singer, the logic of the keyboard would be better appreciated. My wife is a vocalist, so that's why.
Oh, cool.
I would totally agree with that, because I took piano as a kid, and that has helped me so much just to visualize the sharps and flats and the way that things are laid out. And, you know, it's just great to have that foundation.
It is. I agree, because the piano has really done that for me as well, too. I can think on both instruments. And actually, any song I play on the piano, I can actually play on the guitar, vice versa, which is kind of an odd thing that has gone on, but I think it's because I played so many different instruments growing up out of necessity. When I was in the junior high band, which I guess the equivalent now is middle school, they realized right away that I could do that, so anything that was missing they would send me home with. And it was, once I got the logic of one instrument, it just carries over to the other instrument, and then it's just a matter of working on the technique and the physicality of that instrument as far as how to get the tones out. But theory was the same. And once you understand your basic theory behind an instrument, then you really can kind of get any other instrument pretty quickly.
Well, that is one thing that's really unique about you, I think, as a music teacher and a musician. When you look at your catalog, you offer such a breadth and depth of different instruments and different songs and different styles of music. It's really quite amazing what you have to offer.
Well, and that's just back to, you know, my upbringing, because I was, you know, I had a classical mother, but then I was exposed to really good popular music early. My dad, even though he's not a musician, he really loved music. And I remember I got to hear the soundtrack to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang before anybody in our town knew that the movie had even existed. But he was a pilot in the Air Force, and he would go on remotes. And evidently, he was someplace where it had just shown up, and he went to go see the movie and was so moved by it, he brought the record home, the 33 1/3 record, and we listened to it before anybody in our little humble town of Valdosta had even known that it existed. He brought home my first Chet Atkins album. He just loved good music, and so I grew up listening to some really good stuff, popular stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really high quality. And then, of course, I had the classical. My mother was teaching constantly. And so I was always hearing classical piano pieces just round the clock.
You were surrounded by music, it sounds like.
I was, and surrounded by really good music and by a mother who could explain it to me. And so I might would learn something that I didn't have a clue really how to describe it. And she'd say, well, you know, that looks like that's what they would call a dominant chord. What you're hearing there is that dominant to a tonic. Anytime you're on a dominant 7 chord, it just wants to go to the tonic. And she could explain it to me. I was like, well, that's really cool. And so I had the language and I had the understanding, but I also had the kind of the big 40 acres of uninvestigated forest in my backyard of the music world.
Yeah.
So I had all the safe, you know, stuff to carry me out there with the knowledge that she had. So it was a really good upbringing. And plus also, you know, like I said, being a child of the 70s, you were exposed to everything. In the top 40, it was all there. Everything was being melded together. Everything was fusion at that time. And it's kind of like, you know, because I know this is a technology show, but it's the same thing that's going on now. You know, when you talk about, you know, the internet now, we used to use terms like, well, the World Wide Web, and I'm on the internet. It was just such a narrow concept. But you say internet now, and it means everything. I mean, literally everything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is changing in that way. I know, Bill, that some of your courses, and I don't know how many out of all the ones that you offer, are available through the Library of Congress, the National Library Service. They can be downloaded if you're a member of the National Library Service. Can you comment on that a little bit? How much of your stuff is actually up there?
Pretty much everything. We reached an agreement. The guy that runs the music section up there, his last name's Hanson. I forgot his first name all of a sudden. That's strange. But he's been very, very good to me, tried to get me a good price for what it is they offer. But we go back to cassette tapes is when they first got into it. And even though the Royal National Institute for the Blind and the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, which also carry my materials, even though they were using CDs, the National Library Service waited. Because if you think about it, they want to offer a player that you can play the device on. And, you know, you buy a CD player this month, you know, 2 months from now, you won't be able to find that same CD player, much less the people who manufactured it.
Right.
Because it was such a commodity, there was nobody who was really nailing down a consistent technology, and much less something that the government could commit to buy and expect to find from year to year. And so they waited. And we were doing tapes up to just, you know, a few years ago. When they developed the Victor Stream and the NLS looks like they committed to it, then that gave them a format that would use a digital cartridge. And they have their own proprietary attachment, and that's just mainly for copyright protection, that plays their cartridges. And I think they found a company that could supply the cartridges on a consistent basis.
Right.
So once all of that lined up, then they went to that digital cartridge that Victor Stream can play. And it's a pretty cool device because it'll slow it down without changing the pitch.
Right.
Tape machines will slow it down, but it would change the pitch.
Yeah, well, now, even now, it's gone further than that. You can actually download stuff from the Bard app onto many players. Some of them specialize, but they also now have an app for the iPhone and iPad, where you can download books and magazines and music materials. It is kind of exciting how much easier it is for people who are blind to get access to your courses, both through your own website, it sounds like, at reasonable prices, and through the National Library Service if they choose to go that route.
Yeah, just on that same note, John, that was his name, John Hansen, sent me the stats for last year. And of just my by ear material, there was 14,700 downloads last year off that Bard. So that's pretty impressive. So they're very popular and they're very usable, which is what I was shooting for. It was something that anybody anywhere could use to learn to play an instrument. And so I think we've succeeded in that. And now it's just developing it more and more. Like I've just finished up another song for the Guitar by Ear Library, a very advanced jazz piece by a guy called Bruce Foreman. And it's called River Journey. So you might want to pull that up. And then another thing I'm doing too on my website is I'm offering complete lessons for the lesson of the month. And just tried it last month. Usually I'll put like a snippet of the lesson on there. And last month I thought, well, let's put the whole lesson for Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash on there. And I had 440 hits on that within 2 days.
That's a really popular song for some reason.
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody likes Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And so that's something I've started doing. That just allows you to just stream it right off of my server, a complete lesson of the month. And, of course, you can purchase it if you want to buy it on CD or downloadable and own it. But so there's all kinds of things that I'm learning to do technology-wise just to make it more accessible and easy. And the technology has sped up even the way I can record because of the software I use. I use Cubase, and that allows me to edit a lot more easily than you used to could do on cassettes.
Yes.
And then also to create the backing track and the recording of the demonstration recording at the same time I'm teaching the lesson, all on one screen.
Excellent.
Really nice.
One thing that you do is you offer lots of individual songs for people that want to learn a particular song, but you also teach the skill of improvisation.
Sure. What I do is I let people, tell me what it is they want to learn. And I've also have another stream of input, which is called the private lessons, where people will send me a list of songs they want to learn, and they pay more for that, of course, because it's one that I'll build for them. And then right now I think it's about $50, but it takes me probably about 4 or 5 hours to make one. But then I can offer it on the website later and then make up my money in the back end. And they know that's how it works. But they get their song right away. But what it does also, it gives me ideas of what people really want to learn. And because sometimes, you're all excited about a song and you put it out there and all you get back are crickets,
Right.
So that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But it might not mean a lot to anyone else. And so right. I let people, send me in what it is they want to learn, what topics they want to cover. But you're right, with the improv, which is really kind of applied theory, those really do get more hits than the individual songs. Anything that's more of a general category, like the blues guitar one, lead guitar one, scales and theory, things like that, chords, bar chord course one, bar chord course two. Because I think people know that if they have more of a understanding of the overall what's going on, then they can also start picking out other songs just on their own and not necessarily have me teach them a particular song. So you're right at that. The applied theory is more popular and I think more usable in the long haul.
Well, that's what's really exciting to me, because you can take that and use it all over the place.
Sure, and have fun with it,
Yeah. And different strokes, different folks, though. I'm sure there are lots and lots of people out there who just want to learn a particular song.
Right. And we have that. I mean, I've got everything from, Bach to Megadeth.
Right. Right. Do you do any teaching at all, one-on-one teaching online? I mean, if it would even work, Skype video or some other. Are you into that at all?
I have thought about it, and, we'll probably revisit it in the future. But right now, my afternoon times from 3:30 to 8 o'clock each night are filled with private students here that come. And I would just be concerned that if I were to offer that, people would want it in that time frame, which I'm already booked.
Right.
And I do, my mornings, I try to keep them free for, you know, working on my websites, working on recordings. And I do teach a few students throughout the week, you know, in those morning slots. But my afternoon, once 3:30 hits, we're pretty much full till 8 at night. My wife also teaches here in our house. She teaches beginner piano to the kids. And I'll teach some beginner piano, but a lot of the little girls want to take from her because she's kind of a grandma figure. And she also teaches voice, and she's a serious voice person too. She was going down to FSU when she was like 12. And so, but when when she hit the college age, she just really didn't want to major in voice. And she can sing classical and, you know, sing in German and Italian and all that. And about a couple of years ago, she went back and just spent like a year and a half kind of doing some of that and finishing her degree. But she's really more of a popular singer. And she works with a lot of the girls on, you know, stuff they might want to sing at church or in a beauty pageant. She does vocal coaching. Her most impressive story was a girl that came in who was basically a sports major and had never sung in her life. But she's in a sorority, and they wanted her to go, you know, compete for Miss VSU for the sorority, but you had to have a talent. And so she came in here three times a week. She took second place in talent. And
how cool is that?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. How cool.
So my wife works miracles, and there's a recording studio in town, too, where he does kind of private sessions for major record companies. They might have a young group that they want to see if they might want to do something with them. They'll send them to this guy, and he tries to get a good, decent recording. And he'll get her to come in and coach the singer through the recording session. And she's nice. Miracles there, too. So she's a pretty impressive vocal coach, but she teaches here in this particular room I'm in now. That's where the Skype is. I don't really do the Skype, but we have grandkids, so she knows how to do the Skype.
Okay.
So I'm in the Skype room.
Okay.
My room is the studio. I don't Skype in my studio. I just sit in front of a microphone. So.
There you go. Well, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, so I know a little bit about Valdosta, and it's a small town, but it sounds like there's a lot of music going on there.
It's not small anymore, brother. We had the military base here, and then we had the Valdosta State College, which finally got university status, you know, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And so we just got metro status a couple years ago.
Okay.
So we're close to about, I think, 700,000 people. And, of course, we incorporate a little bit of the county in that, and the schools are looking at consolidating, so it's gotten big fast.
Well, it has been more than 30 years since I lived in North Carolina, so I'm sure it has changed a lot.
It certainly has. When I was a kid, there really wasn't much access to accurate guitar information. You know, even the guitar magazines, they were about as accurate as, you know, Tab is now, which is, you know, maybe 70% accurate.
Right.
And even then, you know, you still had to rely on your ear a lot, anybody that you could find that knew something about it. And that I had a guitar teacher that played popular music in this town was kind of a godsend. But he came from New York, you know, and he had an orchestra up there. And he knew all those old big band tunes and jazz tunes. And so I had access to him. And I think there was maybe two people in town that knew how to improv on the guitar. You know, and I happened to know one of them. So you just couldn't find good information like you can now. But now, you know, the Valdosta is the size it is. And, you know, my students, they have access to a lot more than I did growing up.
So it sounds like your business is booming. It sounds like it's good these days.
It is. You know, we teach between 50 to 70 students a week, between my wife and I. We got up to 100 about a year ago, which was very, very unusual. And we hate to turn anybody away just because the people we get usually want us because we're older and we're well-trained. We have a good reputation. You can find, you know, guitar teachers, but it's hard to find somebody that's reliable and somebody that you would feel comfortable dropping your kids off with. And so we have all of that because we teach here in our home, and we've grown up here, so most everybody knows us. So we stay pretty busy. But then with the, you know, the downloading and the internet stuff, I probably still, I was trying to think, on average, probably about, you know, 200 downloads a month is what I'm probably and doing now off of the website. So it's pretty busy. We stay pretty busy. And, of course, the Library of Congress, you know, buys everything that we produce, as does the Canadians and the United Kingdom. And so all of that keeps all of our plates spinning.
So just to reiterate, anyone who's blind, who's a subscriber to the National Library Service, can get access to your stuff that way.
Absolutely. They have everything except the most current titles. They haven't purchased those yet. But they have, and that's only probably about maybe 60 or 70 of the most current titles. They don't have those. But they do have everything else.
But the most current titles are, again, available on your website. Now, I'm guessing that the download business has... It probably is something relatively new for you, but it sounds like it's added a reasonable component to your business because it does make it easier for people to get the songs that way and
get the
lesson.
It stays very, very, very active. And I have to kind of keep up with it. But we accept all the major credit cards. It goes through authorize.net. The download part is automated. So once you fill out the order, we do take PayPal, but not directly through the cart. You still fill out your order on the cart, but you have to use your own PayPal account because to get the PayPal, they want you to get the whole big shebang account, and that's like $50 to $100 a month, and I just don't want to do that.
Right. But are you saying, though, that people who have a PayPal account can pay that way if they choose to?
What they do is they fill out their order online, and then they just go to their own PayPal account and send me the money.
Right.
Shows up here, then I release the order manually. So that one's done manually. But if you're using Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, that's just done total automatic on the website.
Okay. Well, great. And is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't touched on? I think we've covered it pretty well, but I really was so excited about these lessons and about them being available through Library of Congress and all. I really wanted to get you on to talk about it so more people can take advantage of it.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, if they want to try one for free, if they will email me and tell me that they heard it on this show, then I will send them a gift certificate for $10 and they can use it to get whatever they want. How's that?
That's exciting.
Excellent.
How about giving them your email address?
Sure. Just bill@musicvi.com.
Excellent. So you heard it here first, guys. Send Bill an email and he'll give you a gift certificate and you can try out a free lesson. Thanks for doing that.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be the best way for them to see just how easy it is, because everybody who uses these loves them. And it's just, getting enough courage or curiosity to just give it a shot. But everyone who's ever used any of these lessons have loved them. I've only had one person ask for a refund on a blind course, and she really wouldn't tell me why, and I was afraid to ask. But evidently they got it, and she called, and she seemed kind of a little upset. She said, I just need to send it back, and I just didn't ask questions. So it sounded as though something bad had happened. But I get plenty of notes from grandmothers who say, God bless you, you saved my grandson. He was so depressed, but now he's playing the guitar. Had one other guy, and he wasn't even visually impaired, but he was on disability, and he started using the guitar stuff and started playing more. Then he started teaching some people in his neighborhood. Then he got a little band together, and then he started traveling around. Well, then he came off the disability. Now he has a saw sharpening shop, and he just made a CD. So it's just really impressive to see what music does for people who, for whatever reason, have hit kind of a bump in the road. And if you just get them to do it, it's so much fun.
Absolutely.
This is so easy to do. It really, really is.
Yeah, putting on my psychologist hat for just a second, I will tell people music is a great way to help yourself feel better and a great way to sort of relax. But while you're learning these things from Bill Brown, be kind to yourself. Be patient with yourself and take your time and don't be afraid to try and don't be afraid to practice.
Right. Just remember, as an adult, adults are very time sensitive. They just want everything now.
Yeah.
So just know that you're doing better than a kid would, doing the same material. You just have to be patient, like you said.
Exactly. Well, Bill, I want to thank you again very much for taking the time to come on the Tech Doctor podcast. We do have a lot of listeners literally from all over the world. So you might get quite a few emails and correspondence from people. So again, thanks a lot for doing this.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bill.
Well, thank you, Allison, and thank you, Robert. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's really cool what you guys are doing as well.
All right, well, great. So this is Robert, the Tech Doctor, and for this time, I'll say so long, you guys.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.